Friday afternoon. You've worked the whole week, and now you're here. Hi, it's Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for following me on Twitter, at Paul Harris Show, or my website, harrisonline.com. Max is here, and Tim is here as well. And before Max and I jump into the showbiz stuff, Tim, you had something you wanted to say?
I did. Your opinion, I finished up the Vietnam series last night. Your opinion of it?
I have not watched a second of it because we were...
I knew you were out of town.
We were out, you know, we went on that Yellowstone trip last week, and then I just have been so busy this week, I haven't watched it. So I will have all 18 hours on my DVR, and I will get to them.
Okay.
But you liked it?
Let me tell you something. That was the absolute... Now, he does great stuff all the time, but that was the absolute best documentary I've ever watched.
Wow.
And I think it has to do with a few things. Okay. I was young, when I used to watch a lot of the stuff on the news. And then my brother was over in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive and that. So it was that, you know, that in your living room and stuff. But, I was glued to it. I was fascinated, and I end up at watching the whole thing. I was angry. I was, sad, and I was bewildered. That's how it left me. And I think it probably left a lot of people the same way.
I think so, too. I don't think it's the kind of thing you watch. And again, I haven't seen it yet. But having talked to Ken about it and having seen what they call the sizzle reel, which they sent me ahead of time before I interviewed him, I don't think it's the kind of thing you watch and turn off and go, boy, I'm in a great mood.
Yeah. No, you don't. And it I don't think it opens up old wounds. It just really puts a light on the wounds that were there. And, you know, you just got to move on. But it's really funny how things change, but they're much the same way as they were back then.
Yeah.
In a lot of different ways.
I know it's been getting big ratings on PBS stations around the country, including Channel 9 here in St. Louis.
So I stole one of McGraw's. I was on with McGraw, and he asked me, and I said, well, I'm going to steal one of your words. I said it was riveting. That's what he says about everything.
But in this case, it applied because you used it.
It really was. It was awesome.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Tim.
All right.
Now let's get on to the movie reviews for this week. There are actually four movies that are out there in theaters. One of them, go ahead. One of them is going to be on my best movies of the year list. So I'll tell you what. There's one movie that you've seen, and there are three movies that I've seen.
That's right.
So I'm going to start with one of mine, and then we'll go back and forth.
How about you do two of yours, and then we can do ours, and you can end with one of yours.
Oh, well, we'll see. the one I want to start with is called Battle of the Sexes. This is a story based on a true story from 1973.
You mean they let women play tennis?
Yeah.
What?
Well, we're a tennis household. My wife and I both played tennis for many, many years. My wife still does play. I don't because I screwed up my leg playing tennis. So this is a story that was particularly relevant to us, but I think will be relevant to a lot of people. In 1973, Bobby Riggs was a 55-year-old hustler who was a has-been. He had won Wimbledon in his youth, but he couldn't really stand being out of the spotlight. So he challenged Billie Jean King, who at the time was the number one women's tennis player in the world, to play against him for a $35,000 payday. Billie Jean declined that offer. She had no interest in that. But then she was beaten and replaced at the number one spot by Margaret Court, and so Bobby Riggs then challenged that new champion, Margaret Court, and she accepted and lost badly. And that allowed Bobby Riggs to go around making even more male chauvinist comments, like how women only belonged in the kitchen and the bedroom. Not atypical in 1973 America. He saw an even bigger opportunity to make money and increase his fame, so he challenged Billie Jean King again, this time for a $100,000 payday. And even though she thought the Margaret Court debacle had hurt the women's movement, which she was a big part of, trying to get equal prize money for women, they actually broke away from the U.S. Ladies Tennis Association or Lawn Tennis Association to form the Women's Tennis Association and the Virginia Slims Tour. Yes, there was a time when sporting events were sponsored by cigarette companies.
You've come a long way, tennis.
That's right. She finally relented, and the result was the most watched tennis match in history. 90 million people in this country alone saw this spectacle, which was broadcast in primetime on ABC from the Houston Astrodome, with Howard Cosell doing the play-by-play and a circus-like atmosphere as part of the big build-up.
I believe I heard it was the most watched tennis match of all time.
Yes, it was. I just said that. That's where you heard that.
Okay.
That is the heart of this movie, Battle of the Sexes, which has really good performances by Emma Stone as Billie Jean King and Steve Carell as Bobby Riggs. He's grown into a terrific actor over the years. Plus, there's a supporting cast that includes Sarah Silverman and Bill Pullman and Elizabeth Shue and Alan Cumming. And they also have kept Howard Cosell's original audio track from 1973, in which he's interacting with an actress who's playing Rosie Casals, who was a female tennis pro at that time, and a friend of Billie Jean King's, who was in the booth with Howard, and he would get in his little misogynistic comments, and she would get the shots back at the men. It was very entertaining. So that's still the original audio of him with the actress, very well used in this movie. The movie is directed by Valerie Faris and Jonathan Dayton. You may not know those names off the top of your head, but they made a couple of movies that I really enjoyed, Little Miss Sunshine and Ruby Sparks. And this movie shows just how much discrimination women faced in that era and how important Billie Jean King was in advancing the fight for equality and encouraging other women to do the same thing. Because in 1973, sexism was routine in this country. We had not really advanced much past the Mad Men era. There's one character in here played by Bill Pullman where the misogyny just drips out of his face every time he's on the screen. It's really remarkable to see again.
Riggs, however, is playing this up. He's not necessarily a misogynist himself, correct? He's doing the whole, like, women can't drive kind of thing, right?
Well,
sort of the...
What we see in this movie is a lessened version of Bobby Riggs. Steve Carell's version makes Bobby Riggs seem to be a lovable guy who was just kidding. But I've read enough about this match to know that in real life, Bobby Riggs actually was that way. He was a 55-year-old man.
Sure.
That's how middle-aged guys thought about women in 1973 and in 1963 and in 1953. And let's be honest, even in 2017, men can still get away with saying shockingly offensive things about women and not having a lot of consequence, as we have learned in the last 18 months. Now, I do have one objection to this movie. Battle of the Sexes spends too much time on Billie Jean King's discovery that she's a lesbian. She gets involved with a hairdresser played by Andrea Riseborough. She's very good in the movie. And that's an important part of Billie Jean King's life. But it is overemphasized in this movie, and I think it's to the detriment of the rest of the story. And I worry that it may end up keeping some people who should see this movie away. I think some word of mouth is going to get out there after this movie opens this weekend, and some parents of young girls, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old girls, who should see this movie to see a female athletic icon and women's rights icon, they may not get a chance to see it because that's in there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
What is the movie rated?
It's PG.
Oh, it's just, okay.
Straight PG.
Huh. Or gay PG.
That's very good. So I worry that it's going to keep people away, and I hope it doesn't. And I'm not saying in any way that King's life choices were wrong. I'm just talking about the context of the movie, which, without that, could have been tightened up. This thing runs 2 hours. It doesn't have to. You cut back part of that story. Not all of it, but you cut back part of that story, and you have a tighter, better movie. Now, this is not the first time that that famous tennis match has been dramatized on screen. Back in 2001, there was a TV movie I remember watching with Holly Hunter stealing the show as Billie Jean King and Ron Silver doing a very good job as Bobby Riggs.
I could see both of those actors in those roles.
But it's a story worth telling again for a new generation, especially when it's this well done. I give Battle of the Sexes an 8.5 out of 10.
Now, when you said that one of these might be on your best of list this year, is this the movie?
Well, we're going to find out.
Oh, Paul, you're killing me.
I've got a couple more to get to, but let's get to the one that you and I both saw together this week.
Okay.
We both went to a press screening of the new Tom Cruise movie.
Yes, we did.
Which is called American Made.
Mm-hmm. You would like me to start?
Take the lead.
Okay, I will take the lead. There is, somewhat strangely, this small cottage industry of movies about white males who get involved in large-scale arms dealing for the U.S. government, usually for overseas territories. There's been a lot of these movies.
There was one last year called War Dogs, which I liked a lot.
I despise despised that
Miles
movie.
Teller and
Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill.
I hated that movie for a lot of the same reasons why I don't like American Made. But there have been decent versions of this small little genre of films. I really liked Lord of War with Nicolas Cage and Jared Leto.
I didn't like that one.
Okay, wow, that's so funny. Well, so maybe you liked American Made, and we can get to that in a moment. This one is directed by Doug Liman, who's done some really great movies over the years, like Go and Swingers. He also directed Edge of Tomorrow, which is also known as Live, Die, Repeat. He did also, the first Bourne Identity film.
He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Jolie and Pitt.
Absolutely. And so he's really great at mixing action, really well put together action and comedy. And he does that again with American Made. At least he tries to. He reteams with his star of Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise, you know, he really can't buy a hit unless the movie's called Mission Impossible blank. Mission Impossible number 16 or Rogue Nation.
Or Jack Reacher. Wasn't that sequel a hit?
It was not a hit.
It
pretty much put the brakes on any future Jack Reacher movies.
Really?
Anything he does that isn't a Mission Impossible film, including The Mummy, which came out earlier this year, has been a huge bomb.
Yeah.
So I don't think this one will do very well either. It is a slower week at the box office, but quite frankly, I think more people will go out to watch Battle of the Sexes, and I think they'll go see it because it's still in the headlines because it's making so much money.
Or Kingsman, left over from last week.
Absolutely. So in this movie, it's based on a true story too, is what they tell you. There's a guy named Barry Seal, who is a TWA pilot, who is recruited by the CIA to help run guns and drugs.
Yeah.
Guns and other contraband.
Well, first he's hired to do reconnaissance missions over Central America.
Yeah, but you know that something else is going on.
And before you know it, he's involved with Manuel Noriega in Panama
and Pablo Escobar
in the Medellin drug cartel in Colombia.
And this is played mostly for laughs, like in a can you believe this kind of way. And you've got the needle drops of all the 60s, you know, music. And it's supposed to have that. I mean, it's what Scorsese did so very well with Goodfellas. And everybody's tried to rip that movie off since. And that's why I really didn't like War Dogs. I thought it was trying so hard to be Goodfellas. Now, growing up in the mid to late 80s, I remember the Iran-Contra affair. It's interesting to have an actor playing Ollie North, and then you see the real videos of Oliver North towards the end.
Yep.
This is where Barry Seal's story is going. But I was struck by something, Paul, that maybe other reviewers across the country won't necessarily be struck with. And I got very angry watching this film.
Really?
At least the first half of this film. And I went on a little mini rant after the movie. And some of the other critics who were around us, Paul, kind of slowly backed away from me and kind of made their way towards the exits. But I got angry watching the film because I felt like we've had a lot of noise in the country over the past couple of weeks, ever since Anthony Lamar Smith was killed, and Stockley was, of course, you know, he was
found not guilty.
And now that case goes back to 2011, but it was in the news recently. We have everything from the local protests and things happening at the Galleria and what have you in different neighborhoods. We have the NFL protesting this kind of perceived injustice with taking a knee. The president is talking about it, and yet I go see a movie like American Made, where a guy is profiteering off of illegal contraband for the government, and he's being, in my mind, celebrated. Like, isn't this wacky? Look at what this guy's doing. And I thought to myself, okay, so the local person who's a low-level drug dealer who was, at the time, attempting to deal heroin mm-hmm. when he was shot
mm-hmm.
is, rightly or wrongly, completely demonized. Look at this. But a white guy dealing all kinds of guns and drugs and what have you for Pablo Escobar,
yep.
we make a movie out of him.
Well, look what happened to Oliver North.
We hire Tom Cruise.
Oliver North, who was the guy who was pretty much the brains behind the Iran-Contra affair, once he went on TV and people saw him sitting there at that Senate hearing,
yep.
the guy became a hero to a lot of people.
He had a talk show for a
very
long time.
He still has a show on Fox.
Yeah, and so what I realize is what's the difference here? I mean, yes, you have government backing. That is a difference. But I think race comes into this, too. Whenever you see a black male on screen dealing drugs, it's in a cautionary tale, like Menace to Society or Boys in the Hood or Juice. But whenever it's a high-level, maybe white-collar person dealing drugs, it's a white person, and we make amazing movies, like saying, oh, look at this. Isn't this hilarious?
Yeah.
So I got very angry thinking about what's going on, not only in our backyard here in St. Louis, but also in the country in general. And I think, again, I know it's not the same read that everybody's going to have on the movie, but I got pretty angry watching it.
But did you get angry watching Walter White on Breaking Bad? That's a white guy. Making drugs.
Who becomes the villain of his own show, which is kind of the genius of that show, I think.
He's the anti-hero.
You're starting to root against him towards the end of that show. But I will say this about American Made. I need to watch it again. I'm not recommending it. I didn't like the movie, but I will give it a second chance because I like Doug Liman's films. And towards the end of the movie, when things start going off the rails and things turn out pretty badly for everybody involved, unless your name is Ollie North or Ronald Reagan, it does kind of pull the rug out from under the audience. And I thought, okay, maybe this movie is a little smarter than I was giving it credit for. Maybe it was setting you up so it could pull that rug out. But I kept going back to a movie that we've talked about at length now, Kill the Messenger, with Jeremy Renner as Gary Webb,
mm-hmm.
which is about an investigator, a reporter.
A journalist.
Yeah. Figuring out that the CIA is dealing cocaine, basically, and things don't work out well for him either. That's more of the take on a story like this that I can get behind. Mm-hmm. More of the straightforward, sobering take. This sort of ha-ha, wacky, Tom Cruise is going to moon his family now, isn't it so hilarious? I have a hard time with that.
Well, I think those are valid points. Those are valid points. I have three things I have to add. Number one, Doug Liman, the director of this movie, his father, Arthur Liman, was the chief counsel to the Senate committee that investigated the Iran-Contra scandal.
Really?
How's that for a non-coincidence?
You just call your dad and go, I need some intel.
Yeah. What was it like to ask questions of Oliver North? That's all part of the movie, not Arthur Liman, but that, you know, all of that that you just talked about. Secondly, I would say the best performance in the movie is not by Tom Cruise. It's by Domhnall Gleeson, who plays Monty Schaefer, which may or may not be the real name of the CIA officer who devised this whole bizarre scheme in the first place.
And I was left wondering if that person even existed, which I like a lot. Like when
doesn't
like,
matter.
Who's Schaefer? I thought that was really
doesn't
fantastic.
Matter. Could be a composite of characters, absolutely, or yeah. Could be a real guy, yep. Or may not be his actual name. Doesn't matter. Gleeson plays him very straight, but has a slight smirk on his face in every scene, as if even Schaefer can't believe what he's getting away with.
Yeah.
What he's pushing Seal to do while denying everything. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is, I'm curious why this movie, which was shot in 2015, was not released until now.
Hmm.
Now, maybe you know about this, maybe you don't, but I suspect that the filmmakers felt that they weren't explaining the story well enough. So they went back and added some VHS-style video footage. Remember that's in there?
Yeah.
With Tom Cruise talking directly to camera
and
that fuzzy, grainy stuff.
Which completely could have been inserted after the fact.
Right. It's like voiceover narration that's added to a movie that doesn't really tell you the story well enough.
And it kind of goes away after a while. You're right. I'd forgotten about those inserts. Very strange.
So I wonder about that. I haven't seen anything explaining why they did it that way or whether that was part of the original script. But I will say this. When you walk out of the movie theater, whether you like this movie or don't like this movie, you will not be able to describe to other people what the scheme was that Barry Seal was involved in.
I am unclear as to why Barry Seal was recruited in the first place. Hey, I fly for TWA. Well, so do a lot of people.
I don't know either. I don't know. But I do know that at some point in the movie, he becomes on the radar of not just the CIA, but tell me if I'm missing one here. The DEA, mm-hmm. the ATF, mm-hmm. the Louisiana State Police, mm-hmm. and a sheriff in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
They're all involved in this plot. And frankly, I don't know exactly what was going on at some points in this movie. However, I will say I liked it more than you did. I give it a 7 on a scale of 10. You probably give it like a 2.
No, I will give this movie a solid 3.
Okay.
So together
it gets a 10.
Yes, together. Just bring more than one person and it'll get a 10.
All right, that's American Made with Tom Cruise and Battle of the Sexes with Emma Stone and Steve Carell. Still two more movies to go and some other showbiz stuff as well as we continue here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris talking about showbiz stuff with Max in this hour. We've already reviewed Battle of the Sexes, which I gave an 8.5 out of 10. And we also reviewed American Made, which I gave a 7 out of 10. And Max gave a 3 out of 10. See, that's what happens sometimes when you have two people go to the same movie and walk out with very divergent opinions.
But we don't talk. It's like, I have never felt more unloved than after a movie screening when Paul Harris is there, because you will, it's like I'm made of kryptonite. You stay so far away from me.
I know that you're talking to other people about the movie, and sometimes I'm talking to other people about the movie, but I want it to be fresh when we come in here and do this on Fridays.
It always is.
So I have no idea what you think about most of these movies. One correction, I said Battle of the Sexes is rated PG. It's not. It's rated PG-13. So maybe that will allay some of my fears about the young girls going to see it.
And, you know, I know every kid is different. Every parent is different. But do you think on the whole, 13 is fine to go see that movie?
Yeah, I think 10 is fine to see the movie. But I think that some people might be scared off by, as I mentioned, that aspect of the movie I talked about earlier. Before I get to the next movie to review, I have to tell you, when my wife and I were flying home from our trip to Yellowstone last week, we were on a Delta flight from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to Minneapolis before we flew Minneapolis to here, because you can't go nonstop from St. Louis. And the Delta flight had the screens in the back of the chairs and their entertainment system, which is free. I hadn't been on a plane where they gave you free movies for a long, long time. And there were three men sitting in the aisle seats across from me and in front of him and in front of him. And they all were watching the Fast and Furious. What's the eighth movie called?
The Fate of the Furious.
The Fate of the Furious with eight. F8.
Yes.
Of the Furious. They were all watching the same movie. The difference here is that if you went back 20 years and watched a movie on a plane, everybody was watching the same movie at the same time because it was on a screen at the front of the cabin. Now, you can watch it on demand anytime you want. And these guys had started watching the same movie about a minute apart. So I would look over occasionally from what I was doing. I was watching something on my iPad, which I'll tell you about in a second. One guy would watch it, and I saw this amazing car stunt, which is all that movie really is. But I saw one amazing car stunt where the car flies up into the air and then lands in the water and blows up, and oh, it's really exciting. And then as soon as that ended, it started on the next screen in front of him. And as soon as that ended, it started on the next screen in front of him. And I thought to myself, I would be really mad if I was watching this movie and was 3 or 4 minutes behind. These are live spoilers. These are the movies being spoiled for me by other people in my peripheral vision.
I wouldn't be able to do that. I would have to fast forward mine if I could. Just
I don't think you can.
Ah, that's horrible.
I don't think you can. The movie I was watching on my iPad was a Netflix movie that I downloaded called Mission Control, The Unsung Heroes of Apollo, which is about the people, all the men, because it doesn't get into the hidden figures characters who are behind the scenes. This is about the all white men at the time who were working in Mission Control for the Apollo space program when John Kennedy said, we're going to go to the moon in this decade and bring a man safely back, you know, all of that. These are the people in that room who had to make it happen. And they had some of the, a couple of astronauts, but it was mostly the flight engineers and the technical people who worked on the computers. You know, the entire Mission Control room computing power was less than I have in my iPhone now.
Shocking.
That's remarkable. But it's great. And people who I've had the honor of interviewing, Gene Kranz and Chris Kraft, who were the two flight directors for these missions to the moon, the greatest scientific achievement in history, they talk about what it was like in there, but they also talk about the tragedy of, for instance, when they had the fire on the launch pad for Apollo 1, and three American astronauts, Gus Grissom, Ed White, and I can't remember Chaffee's last name, first name, but they died there. And these guys all talk about it and get a little bit emotional about it. They talk about the decision to send Apollo 8 around the moon and what it was like when one of them started on Christmas Eve reading the book of Genesis over the microphone for America. It was a very, very moving time. Even if you're not religious, it was remarkable to see. And they also talk about the Apollo 13 disaster, which you know if you've seen the movie, but to hear the people who were in there talking about it, and you know the scene in the movie Apollo 13 where all the guys in the back are figuring out how do we put these pieces together? This is what they have on board the spaceship, and we have to make this work so that we can get the carbon dioxide out of the air, and this is all they have to work with. Well, these guys who were in the control room are talking about it, and they would run back to those guys in the back and say, they're bugging us. You know, Jim Lovell, the commander, was saying, he's asking us for a solution. Do you have a solution yet? We're close, Gene. We're close. Don't come back here anymore. And it also talks about how the smoke. Because, again, we're talking about the 60s when all these guys smoked. One of them said, one day I walked down the hall to enter Mission Control, and as I did, there was a big whoosh, and the hall filled up with smoke.
That's great.
It filled up with the smoke from these guys inside. It's a terrific documentary. It's called Mission Control, The Unsung Heroes of Apollo, and it's on Netflix now.
You know, I've heard that before, that we have more power in our cell phones right now, our smartphones, than they had back then. Then why aren't we sending people to the moon from our phones? Give me that. I'll send somebody to the moon right now.
Well,
beep, boop, boop, moon.
You know,
there was a guy outside the window just here. Beep, boop, boop, moon.
If Elon Musk had his way, we would be doing that.
I don't know why it's beep, boop, boop, but I just think beep, boop, boop, moon.
By the way, my phone doesn't make that beep, boop, boop
it
sound.
That's why, I don't know why mine
that's
does.
Why
I,
you know what? That's why we can't send people to the moon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We need to figure that part out. Beep, boop, boop, moon.
Get that guy in the room. You know where he is? He's in the back putting the sock over the CO2 filter.
Smoking so much right now. It's crazy.
Right. All right. Third movie to review for you of the new ones that are out in theaters this week is actually a movie that came out last week, but I wasn't here on Friday to review it for you. It's called Brad's Status, and it stars Ben Stiller. And it's important for me to say right up front, I am not a Ben Stiller fan.
I am not either.
I cannot stand the characters he's played in Zoolander and Dodgeball and the Meet the Parents and the Fockers movies.
Yep.
That over-the-top, scenery-chewing stuff that he does just turns me off. No matter how many times he does it, doesn't get any better. But finally, he's done something different, and it's called Brad's Status. In this movie, Ben Stiller plays the title character, Brad, a guy who runs a nonprofit in Sacramento, and he has a pretty good middle-class life. He's married to Jenna Fisher, who works for the state government. He's got a son, Troy, played by an actor named Austin Abrams, who's a high school senior. He's got pretty good grades. But Stiller's character, Brad, is racked with jealousy over the success of the guys he went to school with. There's Jason, played by Luke Wilson, who runs a successful hedge fund and has a private jet and a beautiful wife and beautiful kids. There's Craig, who's played by Michael Sheen, who used to work in the White House and wrote a best-selling book and is now an in-demand TV pundit. There's Nick, who's played by Mike White, who's a movie director who is so famous that his house was featured in an architectural magazine that, of course, Brad came across in the dentist's office and looked through it, and it just fueled his rage even more. There's a guy named Billy, who's played by Jermaine Clement, who's from, what's that comedy team?
Flight of the Conchords.
Yes, that's right. Billy made a fortune in tech, and now he lives on the beach in Hawaii with two hot young women. And Brad is jealous of all four of those guys. As Brad takes his son, Troy, off to the Boston area to visit colleges, he wonders what went wrong with his life. Why doesn't he have a private jet? Why doesn't he have one of those airline club cards that lets him board the plane first?
You know, he's married to Jenna Fisher, so maybe he's just calmed down a little bit.
Well, that's part of the point of this movie. Why did he go to Tufts when his son is apparently good enough to go to Harvard? How did he get left behind in the social hierarchy? Okay, it's a severe case of white male privilege. Absolutely. But he can't stop wondering how it's fair that his friends, who were the same guys he was, they all have so much more than him. And Ben Stiller embodies this character and this persona perfectly. There's a wonderful scene at Harvard with an actress by the name of Shazi Raja, who I think we're going to see a lot more of after this performance. She plays a Harvard undergrad who knew Brad's son Troy in high school, and so she gets together with them over drinks at a bar near Harvard Square. And Brad is taken with how smart and funny he is, how funny she is. And even though he's married to Jenna Fisher, he's thinking, why didn't I meet somebody like her when I was in college? And then he pours out his angst to her, and she does not give him the reaction he expects or we expect her to give. It's not romantic in any way, but it's a really, really good scene. All of this was written by Mike White, who not only plays Nick, who doesn't even say a word in the movie, one of the guys that Brad is jealous of. But Mike White wrote and directed this movie. He was also responsible for School of Rock, the Jack Black mega hit, which became a TV series and, of course, is a hit Broadway musical. He also wrote Jennifer Aniston, I think her best movie role, in The Good Girl. You ever see that one?
Oh, yeah, with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
That's a very, very good movie.
Very good movie. You may have also seen Mike White traveling with his father on The Amazing Race a few seasons ago. In Brad's Status, Mike White keeps the camera tight on Ben Stiller quite often, so we can see every nuance of anxiety on his face. But at other times, he pulls back, and we see the relationship Brad has with his son and his wife and the other people in his world, and it all gives us perspective on his life and maybe, perhaps, our lives as well. I mean, this sounds so philosophical as I get into it, but that's what the movie makes you think about.
I have a silly question about the title.
Go ahead.
Brad's status, I know that it possibly is talking about his status in life and where he is compared to other people, but when I first heard the title, perhaps it's because I just watched the horror film Friend Request, but I couldn't help but think, is it some sort of Facebook reference that he updates his status
No.
I think a lot of younger audiences are going to say, oh, Brad's status, really, I had a crumpet. Like, I'm just wondering if that's what they're going to think it is.
I think you're right. I hope that they will go see the movie and then post Facebook posts about this as they leave. Considering that I have not liked Ben Stiller in anything since Flirting with Disaster 20 plus years ago, I'm surprised to find him in a movie that will probably be on my best of 2017 list.
So it's this one.
This is the one. 9 out of 10.
Wow,
shocking. For Brad's status.
I would have stayed away from this one because of Stiller.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Max is here with me. We're talking about movies. Remember 2 weeks ago when I reviewed Mother, the Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem movie?
I think you gave it like a one.
Yeah, one and a half, two, something like that. I told you to be on my worst movies of the year list, and it bombed big time.
Yes, it did. And Paramount is sticking by it. They released a statement saying, we love taking chances, which tells me they're going to nominate for a bunch of Oscars. They're going to try.
They're going to try, but they're not going to succeed.
You don't think so?
No. This thing is a bomb. So much so that Darren Aronofsky, Jennifer Lawrence's boyfriend who directed and wrote this thing, he's out there now trying to give explanations of what the movie was. And let me tell you, if you make a movie and then you have to go out on a publicity tour to explain it, you failed as a movie maker. Now, one more movie to review for you, and this is a movie called Shot. In this movie, a teen named Miguel, a Latino kid named Miguel, is on one side of an L.A. street. He's getting an illegal gun from his cousin so Miguel can protect himself against some bullies at school. On the other side of the street, there's this white guy named Mark who's walking down the street with his estranged wife, Phoebe, who's African-American. And he's trying to convince her not to divorce him. And by the way, the woman who plays the wife in this, for two-thirds of this movie, I thought it was Kerry Washington. It's a woman named Sharon Leal, but she is a perfect doppelganger for Kerry Washington. Suddenly, the gun goes off in Miguel's hand. The bullet flies across the street, and in an instant, it hits Mark in the chest and knocks him to the sidewalk. And that's not a spoiler. That's the launching point of this movie. That's why it's called Shot. We then follow both Mark and Miguel in split screen. Miguel, as he panics and runs away, hoping nobody saw him and desperate to get rid of this illegal gun. And Mark, the victim, as he's taken care of by paramedics, including, by the way, Malcolm Jamal Warner. Hmm. And then he's taken to the emergency room. And it's here that the movie gets a little odd, solely because Mark is played by Noah Wiley, who for 15 years was in the emergency room as Dr. John Carter on ER. But now he's the patient, not the physician. And there are a couple of things that happen in that scene.
He's correcting everybody the whole time.
Well, that's what I thought. That would be funny if he got up on the table and said, that's not what you do here. Now, you will not be alone in thinking that this makes Shot a very special episode of ER. It's a TV movie with a message. That may be because it was directed and produced by Jeremy Kagan, who's in his 70s, and spent his entire career directing TV dramas and sitcoms. He made two feature films. The last one of those was more than a decade ago. You haven't heard of him. Now, I have a feeling that Kagan, who's the guy who came up with the story in the first place, wanted to say something important about how any random gun incident can wreak havoc on the lives of both the victim and the shooter, but he does it in such a heavy-handed way that it left me bored.
Mm.
And when you get to the end credits, there's text on the screen reinforcing how many Americans are victims of gun violence every year. I mean, these are important statistics, but come on, you're knocking me over the head with a giant mallet.
And what are you supposed to do with it once the movie's over?
Well, they give you a website you're supposed to visit.
Oh, well, there you go.
This movie opened a week ago today at one theater in the St. Louis area, the West Olive 16, the AMC dine-in theater over there. It is not playing in any theaters in St. Louis anymore. This movie, I don't know how much it cost. I looked up, how can you find the budget of a movie? Well, there are places, not for this one. And I don't think this has done business anywhere. I give it a 3 out of 10. It's called Shot. When it comes around on Netflix or Amazon Prime, shoot it down. Don't take it.
But it's better than Mother, is what you're saying.
A lot of things are better than Mother. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. You don't have to go around and explain Shot. Very, very easy to understand. And that's our showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.